Welcome to episode number 245.
It's time for the RV Podcast. Traveling North America in an RV. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of RV reporters.
Hey, have you ever been out in the middle of nowhere and wondered what would happen if something happened, if there was an emergency, and what would happen if you were all alone?
Well, and that's what dawned on us just as soon as it was over. I think all of us, it just kind of dawned on us. It was like, what if we hadn't been here? You could have died.
Well, welcome to another edition of the RV Podcast. And that's what we're going to talk about in our interview of the week segment coming up. If you're a regular listener, you know that Jennifer and I love to boondock. We love to get away from the crowds. We love to enjoy the peace and the quiet. Well, so do a lot of other RVers, of course. But this week in our interview segment, we're going to talk about the substantial number of boondocking folks out there who are solo travelers, being alone in the middle of nowhere. Well, it's equally enjoyable as it is for couples, for those who travel with a friend. It's equally enjoyable for solo travelers, too. But what happens if you're alone and an accident or an emergency happens? And if you're traveling solo, you need to take some extra precautions, and we're going to talk about that, and we're going to get some advice in this week's RV Lifestyle interview segment. Our friends from the Camp Addict website, Marshall Wendler and Kelly Beasley, are going to share their expertise, and they're going to share a harrowing story that illustrates just how bad things can go and how much worse they could be if you were all alone. Plus, we've got RV News of the Week for you. We've got some tips. We've got your questions and an off-the-beaten-path report from the Burkitts. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, my dear.
Hello, Michael.
Well, can you believe it is June already? Camping season. It's in full swing. The roads are filled now with RVs crisscrossing the country. Summer fun's on everybody's schedule. The kids are about ready to get out of school all across the country now, not just in the South, as it's been for several weeks now. Going to be a busy time.
We are headed north into Canada, camping our way through parts of Ontario, and then on into Montreal, Quebec, where we'll spend the weekend before turning south and visiting parts of New England and then New York for some exploration of the Adirondacks.
And for those of you who are wondering, yes, we are taking Bo with us, and hopefully he's going to have fun. This is the first long camping trip that he will have done in our new RV since maybe March. We did a couple of days coming home from Salt Lake City to Florida and then Florida up to here. But this will be a regular camping trip where we'll be spending a couple of days here, a couple of days there, and he's going to do a lot of driving. I think he'll be all right.
The challenge for us is to find off-leash areas where he can run and play because he's used to that.
He's used to dog parks, yep. You know, we usually start the summer by heading to the Rockies. We always head west. This is now we're starting working on year number 8 of doing this. And this year we're changing things up and we're going to head to the east. In Montreal, we're going to be attending a rally of leisure travel van owners. Big rally out there. We've been asked if they ask if we would come and stop by. We go, well, heck yeah. We haven't been to Montreal. We like Quebec. We love Canada. So we'll do that, and then we'll drop down after the rally into the Adirondacks for a couple, 3 weeks, and we'll see how it's going to go. We're going to, instead of heading west, we're going to try and pick some regions of the country that we haven't extensively toured yet, and I think we'll still get out west this year, but we're starting off in the east.
All right. We plan to resume our Ask Us Anything live stream on the RV Lifestyle channel next Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time from wherever we happen to be.
We do love doing those Ask Us Anythings, so look for us next Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We've taken the last couple of weeks off to catch up on some projects. But we've kind of missed those regular Sunday night visits that we have with you. So the excitement of a live audience is always fun. And we're planning, like Jennifer says, to be back next Sunday, this coming Sunday night.
News. Mike's got news. RV news. Travel news. Inside information and trends that shape the RV lifestyle. Here's the RV News of the Week.
The New York State Department of Health warned residents and visitors to protect themselves and their pets from ticks and the diseases they carry, as the number of tick-causing illnesses has been steadily rising. New York State is averaging about 5,500 new cases of Lyme disease each year. Mike and I are noticing more and more ticks as we travel the country, making it more important than ever to wear protective clothing and to educate yourself on safety tips. To see a report we did on the subject not too long ago, see the show notes for this episode at rvlifestyle.com/245.
Out west, a mountain lion that attacked a four-year-old boy walking with his family in California's Los Penasquitos Canyon Preserve was shot and killed by wildlife officials. DNA samples confirmed that last weekend the boy was with about a dozen people in the area called Carson's Crossing on Memorial Day when the mountain lion attacked him. His father kicked and threw rocks at the animal to free his son, who was flown to a nearby hospital for treatment and is expected to recover. Mountain lion attacks are pretty rare, but it is important to watch young children when walking trails in mountain lion country.
A writer published an interesting read last week urging RV manufacturers to listen to what millennials want in an RV. As that age demographic becomes a bigger and bigger share of the RV market. Many of her suggestions Mike and I agree with. Even though we are not in the millennial generation, making smaller RVs, focusing on quality and technology, and improving designs are things we have been talking about for a long time.
Remember the warning that we shared with you recently about the need to stay away from mother elk at Yellowstone National Park, or anywhere else for that matter? Well, last week, a concessions worker at Yellowstone apparently got too close to a baby, and the mother elk attacked her. The woman was taken to an area hospital. We haven't had any further information available about her injuries, but she had to go to the hospital. She was in the Mammoth Hot Springs area of the park. If you've ever been there, there's always a herd of elk or two running around in that area. Despite all the tourists, the elks just walk out in the middle of the street and on the lawns and out in front of the shops, and people get way too close to them taking selfies. Now, this was a concessions worker, so she knew better, but somehow the baby elk must have been nearby. So all this is again prompting officials to warn all visitors to be alert and stay at least 25 feet away from elk and especially their babies.
A sad story coming out of Arizona last week is a good reminder for all of us who walk trails with dogs in rattlesnake country. A dog walking on a trail with its owner in the Superstition Mountains sniffed a bush and was bit in the eye by a rattlesnake. The woman and her friend were able to rush the dog to the vet in time for life-saving anti-venom medication, but the dog will lose its eye.
Remember when we were going to have our dog go through a snake training class?
I remember when you wanted to do that.
You didn't want me to?
No, but we probably should have done it.
Yeah, I think
it probably is really a good idea.
I think it was in Arizona that we saw that.
Yeah.
They basically put a shock collar on the dog, and then they take him out where they have put rattlesnakes, and the rattlesnakes either have their mouths duct taped or they've had the fangs removed, and when the rattlesnake rattles, they give a shock to the dog, so the dog associates that with the snake. And I suppose that's a pretty important thing to do. And then, of course, many vets out west, and then even in the south, where they have a lot of copperheads and moccasins, they have anti-venom. They give injections to the dog. So
yeah, what is it, about $1,000 or something for the injection?
Yeah, it is. But then the cost of treatment for a pet that's been bit by a rattlesnake is really high. So anyway, for those of you in snake country, talk to your vet, see what precautions you can take, and maybe find a way to get some training for your dog, because you don't want them sniffing, putting their nose down in front of a rattlesnake. All right, there's some other short little RV headlines that we gathered this week. A couple I found interesting. Colorado, many campsites in Colorado that are normally open by now are still closed because of snow. It's been a crazy spring. Lots of snow, lots of rain.
Yeah.
And that's in Colorado. Jennifer, have you heard about camping in see-through tents?
That isn't for me, but...
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Apparently, honestly, it must be a new trend, huh?
Yeah, well, where else? In the UK, in Europe. And, of course, hopefully that's not one that's coming this way. Here's a story kind of in the wake of all of the fallout over the collapse of Road Trek, the little Canadian motorhome company. American Fastbacks, which is a company that once was owned by Irwin Heimer Group of North America. They were the previous owners of Road Trek. American Fastbacks this past week has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Still another casualty in the debacle that was once Road Trek. Sorry to see that happen. And then a final story from Nebraska. Most Nebraska state parks are now open. Although, you know, they've had all this flooding, that terrible flooding out there, but high water levels are still an issue out there. You know where else high water levels are an issue? We're due to spend Thursday night at a Ontario Provincial Park on the northern shore of Lake Ontario in Canada. And I just got a note, an email yesterday that many parts of that park and the beach areas are underwater, that the lake levels in Lake Ontario are the highest ever, ever recorded, and that many parts are underwater. Many of the campsites and tent sites are underwater. I think ours, the one I have a reservation for, is okay. But
so we should bring our boots.
We should bring our boots.
And hope that the mosquitoes aren't out.
Oh, I forgot about the mosquitoes and the standing water. Yeah. All right, that's the news of the week. And that part of the podcast is always brought to you by our friends at Rad Power Bikes, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes and now with free shipping and a special discount to those who listen to the RV podcast. Rad Power Bikes offers a series of different e-bike models, and they fit every possible kind of rider wants and needs out there, whether you want a mountain bike or you want a fat tired bike, a folding bike. The models that Jen and I have, we have the city bike models. Mine's kind of like it's kind of like you sit upright a little bit like a beach cruiser. Jennifer's is the same model, but she has the step-through model. She doesn't have to swing her leg over the center bar. All of these awesome models from Rad Power Bikes can reach 20 miles per hour without any pedaling at all. But you can also pedal, and you can use 5 different levels of pedal assist from the little motor. I call it a little motor, but it's the most powerful motor an electric bike can have without having to get a special license for it. It's perfect for people who want to get back into riding. And they're so much fun. They're just so much fun to ride a Rad Power Bikes. Maybe you just need a little extra boost for keeping up with friends and family. You got to look at getting a Rad Power e-bike. You can go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. The reason we love Rad Power Bikes so much for the RV lifestyle is that they're priced at often less than half that of the comparable bikes you'll find on the market because the dealer retail markup chain is cut out. And if you mention RV podcast at the checkout time, you'll get an extra $75 off. Plus, of course, free shipping on all their models. Visit them yourself. Check them out. RadPowerBikes.com.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers. Here's one of our questions of the week.
All right. Two questions came in this week. This is from Karen. And she says, hello, we do long trips. This past trip, we were running an electric space heater in our camper, and for some reason, the cord and plug got really hot, and we lost the electricity in the back half of the camper, and it didn't trip the power switch. So I was just wanting to know if you have any ideas. This is from Karen. Well, Karen, I don't know what kind of an RV you have. You called it a camper. I don't know whether you were plugged into shore power. I don't know whether you were running off battery power. I don't know if you were plugged into 15-amp house current. All those are things that you should know.
I'm wondering about the heater, how old it was, you know, what kind of condition, if it was on. I doubt it was on any type of extension cord.
That's a big thing. If you put on extension cord, it causes heat buildup. That's never a good idea on something that takes a lot of power. And that's what an electric heater does.
And how long it had been running?
Yeah, yeah. Electric heaters, the ceramic kind that we have one that we've used, they can use typically 1,500 watts. And then there's a bunch of others out there that are 1,800 watts. And that is, there's just no way around it. That's a big draw on your electrical system. And depending on what else you were using in terms of 120 power in your unit at the same time, prolonged use of that space heater would cause a heat buildup. A 1,500 watt space heater on a 120 volt outlet uses 12.5 amps. If you have the 1,800 watt space heater, it works out to about 15 amps. So if on that whole system you're running other things, you are maxing out that outlet. Even though you might be hooked up to a 30 amp or a 50 amp supply, this is something a lot of people don't know, is that many of the RV outlets, the individual outlets, particularly in older units, are rated only at about 15 amps. So if anything else is plugged in, or like Jennifer says, you're using an extension cord, or you're maxing out the capacity of that outlet, that would cause even harm to the circuitry behind the outlet, and something engineers call the cascade failure, which typically results in a char burn type around the outlet itself. It could cause a potential fire. Usually everything trips off at that time, and apparently that's what happened in your case. Now, how do you know if this is happening? If the outlet your space heater is plugged into feels warm to the touch or has any dark marks around it, then the outlet contacts have been overheated, and you want to turn that off or replace it. Replace the whole outlet. And I would urge you to take yours to an RV dealer or call in a mobile RV service. 1,500 watts is a lot of drain. And next to your air conditioner and your microwave, that's probably the highest drain you can go. And most of us have other things running off an outlet. You know, there's not enough outlets in any of the RVs. So all this is said, again, I don't know your camper, how long you were using it, what else was plugged in, whether it was shore power, but generally, that doesn't surprise me if you ran it a long time. All right. Jennifer, here's an interesting one. We've told people online and social media that we're heading to New York and Adirondacks. And here's a question from Nita. And she says, I think Nita is a woman. She says, hi, is there any chance you'll be having a meetup while you're in New York? I follow your channel. I watch your videos. I'd love the opportunity to meet you and Jennifer in person. Safe travels, Nita from upstate New York. Well, we might. I don't know. What do you
think?
Sounds
like fun to me.
Yeah. It always gets tough because I'm always telling you where we're going. And then I get people who say, hey, you know, come and see this or come and visit us here. And usually we're on a pretty tight schedule, as we are going to be in Montreal at this rally. We really don't have a lot of time. There's a couple of people who've kindly and generously invited us. Somebody invited us out to dinner and a tour of Montreal.
Oh, that would have been so much fun. What do we do with the bow?
Yeah, well, I think they probably would have. Somebody once gave us a tour at Great Smoky Mountains. Remember that? And they took Bo in a Jeep.
That was wonderful.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to be in upstate New York for a week or two, maybe a little longer, doing some videos and researching for one of our 7-day adventure guidebooks. So we will probably have a little more flexibility there. And maybe we will do a meetup. Maybe we will do it coincide with one of our Ask Us Anything live shows that we do, if we know where we're going to be on a Sunday night. Not this coming Sunday, but maybe a week from Sunday, we'll try and do one. So best way to find out is to follow us on social media, and where the social media we've been really using a lot is Instagram. And if you want to follow us, it's RV Lifestyle Mike, just hashtag RV Lifestyle Mike, and we'll announce it. And also our Facebook group. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/community, rvlifestyle.com/community, or also rvlifestyle.com/Facebook, and you'll be able to get to our group. You can join that, and we'll share it there so people will know ahead of time. But yeah, we'll try and do one. We would love to do something. All right, those are our questions of the week. Now, here's something we'd love you to do, is to call in your questions or your comments. Anything we talked about, we'd love your advice. You just call 586-372-6990. 586-372-6990. That's our voicemail, and we can then have you ask the question, and then I can just play your question, and we can answer it from there. Hey, we want to welcome to the podcast a brand new sponsor, and we are so excited to be partnered with these guys. We're talking about Battleborn batteries. Battleborn batteries. They are probably the premier place to get lithium batteries, lithium deep cycle batteries. Battleborn batteries gives you an opportunity to get rid of all that battery anxiety you have. Not only do their lithium batteries help you have that physical and mental ease of being able to go out and boondock longer, but you can boondock comfortably. They have a whole team of battery experts who are familiar with almost all the existing components in your RV, regardless of whether you have a Class A, Class C, Class B, whatever year, whatever make. There's very few that they cannot come up with a lithium solution for. Travel trailer, cab over camper, same thing. They're experts in those type of RVs as well. They offer three different 12-volt lithium deep cycle models with solutions that can literally drop into any size travel trailer or motorized RV. They also sell a really great lithium ion battery systems that include the inverter, include solar chargers, work with solar controllers and solar chargers. You need to go to their website. It's just go to rvlifestyle.com/lithium and it'll take you right there. rvlifestyle.com/lithium. We are really excited about it because we just installed two Battleborn batteries to replace the batteries in our leisure travel van's Unity RV. Tomorrow, Thursday, the 6th of May, we'll have a video out on our YouTube channel, and I'll upgrade you. I'll show you the whole upgrade we did, update you on the upgrade, which is replacing the two standard batteries that we had on our RV with the drop. We just dropped them in the same place, two lithium batteries. We put in a 2,000-watt inverter. We put in a new solar controller, and the whole system I can see on my smartphone. I can see how well it's performing. I can check the condition of my batteries. These batteries have their own battery management system. They call that BMS, built into them. They work incredibly safe. They work in cold weather. They work in hot weather. They have this all figured out for you. You just need to talk to them about your needs. And again, Battleborn batteries. Go to their website, and we got a link that'll take you right there. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/lithium and tell them you heard about them on the RV podcast. Check out the installation, the way ours is working. We could not be more pleased. In fact, I'm thinking I want more than the two we have. Two we have are doing a great, great job, and we're terrific. We also have this Victron energy inverter. We went up from a 1,000 watt inverter to a 2,000 watt inverter, and just so well put together. Check them out. Go to, again, rvlifestyle.com/lithium. All right, so interview of the week time. We are talking about camping alone in this episode. Now, we're big boosters of boondocking and being far off the grid. We've never had a problem, have we?
Not yet.
Not yet. I don't like the way you said not yet.
Well, but you never say we've never had a problem.
Yeah. Well, we haven't as of yet. And we've just thoroughly enjoyed it. And we know many,
no, it's
many,
not a problem. It's a challenge.
Yes, it is a challenge. But we travel with the two of us. So if an accident happens, there's usually one of us that is there to help. If something goes wrong, there's usually another one of us there to help.
This time we'll have Bo.
Yeah, this time we'll have Bo.
Bo can help.
He's a good barker. But what happens if you're out in the middle of nowhere and you are all alone? Now, I don't want to stop people from boondocking. There's so many solo travelers. But there are some precautions and some things you probably need to think through when you are all alone and you are a solo traveler. Well, this week we're going to feature an interview with our friends from the Camp Addict website, Marshall Wendler and Kelly Beasley. They have a great website that they do a lot of reviewing of RV products, and they're also out in their RV all the time, and they're going to share their expertise. But we're going to begin with a harrowing story that illustrates the topic of today's podcast, just how bad things can go and how much worse they could be if you are all alone. Well, Kelly and Marshall join us right now. And where are you guys, by the way, right this as we talk?
We are mooch docking just north of Taos, New Mexico.
Something happened to you guys that illustrates, I think, a really important part of the RV lifestyle. And that is using your head and not being all alone in a place where if you need help, you can't get it. Why don't you set this up by explaining what happened to you guys just a few weeks ago?
Okay, well, we were boondocking out in Valley of the Gods, Utah. We were with a big group of friends, and little by little, people had taken off, and it was down to one of the last days, and it was myself, Marshall, and three other friends of ours. Well, Marshall and I were leaving that day, so we went through our usual routine of hooking up our trucks and trailers. And I was inside this rig, and I heard him call me, and I heard him call me kind of, it was pretty urgent sounding, but you know, you don't want to freak out right away. So I started walking out of my rig, and as I probably stepped out, I heard him call it again, and this time it was serious. And at that point, I knew something was wrong, so I ran over to his rig, and he's squatting down next to his tires. And I'm like, you know, what's the matter? What's going on? And he I don't remember exactly what he said, because you got adrenaline going and you're kind of freaking out. But in essence, his fingers had gotten stuck in between the levelers under he was trying to pull out from under his tires. So one of his, I think it was just the one finger got stuck.
Yeah, my pointy finger on my right hand.
He could not get it out. And so he's freaking out. He's like, get in the truck and pull it forward. And he was hitched up already too. So I'm just reactive. And I was like, I'm thinking, you know, how much do I pull forward? Just a little, you know. So I go and I jump in the truck, and this is a new truck to him, so I haven't even used it much. So now I'm like freaking out, making sure that am I putting it in drive? Is that really drive? Okay, is that good? Okay, now, and I probably tried to go forward like an inch, and I immediately hear back up. So I mean, this was like horrifying. So I back it up, I put it in park, and I get back out, and I go and I look, try to assess. And this happened three times. I ran back and jumped in that truck again and went forward again. I hear back up. And it wasn't freeing him. And in fact, it might have been doing him more harm than good. And I didn't know what was going on under there. I couldn't see. Second time I jumped out, I think. Then I hollered for our friends who were already looking. They were like, I'm not sure if something was wrong. And they, thank God, came running over. And it, to me, was kind of a blur after that point. I don't remember if I moved it forward and back again or not. I crawled under the rig and looked and tried to see what was going on under there. It looked terrible. It was bad. And then finally, eventually, our friend Mark said, I wish we could just lift the trailer up. And Marshall goes, get a jack. So he came up with the brilliant duh idea. And I fumbled into the back of my truck, grabbed the jack. Thank God I did successfully find mine, because Mark's was way buried in his place. I didn't know how to use the stupid thing, though. So he would have had to have walked me through it. And I mean, he was on the verge of panic at times, you could tell. And then other times he was a little more logical. And, you know, it was awful. It was horrifying. And eventually we did jack the trailer up off of his finger, which was pretty mangled looking. I mean, it looked flat from the side. If you had seen it from the side, I wish we had that photo. I wasn't sure it was going to be usable ever again.
So yeah, you were in a lot of pain, Marshall, right?
Adrenaline.
Yeah, so adrenaline. I was doing pretty well until I told her to move the truck. And then that made things worse, because it sort of, well, my idea was, what happened was I was grabbing the Anderson leveler and trying to pull it out between my two tires. I've got a Lance travel trailer and the tires are fairly close together. And the one Anderson leveler gets wedged between the two because I haven't trimmed it enough, or I hadn't trimmed it enough at that point.
But you also had the Lynx levelers.
And I also had Lynx levelers under there. I was using a combination of Anderson levelers and Lynx levelers. And I had wrapped my hand around the Anderson to pull it out. And when I did that, the trailer shifted back ever so slightly, even though it was still hooked up to the truck. It was already hooked up to the truck. I don't think I had, I mean, it was in park. I don't think I had the brake on, so it could shift a little bit. it moved just enough where my finger got caught between the Anderson leveler and the Lynx leveler. And my idea was, well, the trailer shifted back, so if I have Kelly shifted forward, it'll free it.
Oh,
yeah, no, not so much. And that just made it worse. And then the back forth bit sort of, you know, caused more squeezing on my finger. And at that point, my finger was really starting to hurt. And I was, like Kelly said, I was on the verge of panicking a couple of times. Fortunately, I kept it, you know, semi together, didn't go into full blown panic mode. And then we were able to lift the trailer off of, you know, which is what we should have done to start with, is just lift the trailer straight up.
Yeah.
Now here's the point. I mean, this was just kind of a freak accident.
Correct.
But it happened, and it could happen to anybody out there. What would have happened, Marshall, had you been a solo, all by yourself out there?
Yeah, that's a good one. So we were in the Valley of the Gods, 3.5 miles down the dirt road. I did not have my phone on me, so I couldn't have called for help. There was nobody. If I was by myself, you know, there would have been nobody around to yell to. I may have been able to eventually flag down a car driving by, but that's only fortunate enough because I was on the side of the trailer that had the view of the road. If I was hidden from the road, then I would have totally been in trouble. I don't know. I would have had to gnaw my arm off or something.
Well, and that's what dawned on us. Just as soon as it was over and we were nursing his finger, I think all of us, it just kind of dawned on us. It was like, what if we hadn't been here? You could have died. I mean, if his trailer had been turned the other way, people are flying down that road. I think even if he had been yelling, I don't think anybody would have hurt him. You know, how many days could he have lasted literally stuck there, stuck to his trailer? I don't think, you know, 2-3 without water. Yeah, if he couldn't have gnawed his finger off or somehow cut his arm off, and if he couldn't have got himself free, he would have died. So it slapped us all in the face. It was just a real learning experience that, thank God for us, had a happy ending, but it's made us very, very aware of the potential dangers, things that could happen that you just wouldn't expect to happen out there.
So let's give our listeners some takeaways from all this. Now, you know, I point out to the audience that these guys are experienced pros, RVers. This is their life. They boondock all the time. They know all the ins and outs of camping, all the tricks. If this happened to them, it could happen to you. And so, Kelly and Marshall, share with us the takeaways from this. What's some advice about being out there alone?
Yeah, I wouldn't say to not go and do it by yourself. Just take some certain precautions. So I would one, say try to be somewhere where you are within screaming distance of someone else, or at least they can see you.
Yeah, I would say, you know, make sure, assuming you've got cell service, make sure you've got your cell phone on you at all times.
As much as you possibly can. And if you can't do that, there's that Garmin type of a device.
Oh, the spot, the emergency locator.
I mean, if you're really going to go and be out by yourself, then I would have one of those spot GPS locators with me on my body at all times. You just never know when you're going to have a heart attack, or, you know, get stuck under something, or have a, there's numerous things that could happen.
Another tip is just don't try not to camp alone. I mean, if you can bring a buddy with you, have somebody in a RV near you or staying with you, but having somebody know where you are, where you're supposed to be, is pretty important too.
And if you are one of those solo people who just loves to get away, then at least have a buddy that you tell, hey, I'm going to be here. Drop them some coordinates if you can, and let them know when you're going to be back. And if you're not back in that time, then have someone come and check on you, you know. Well, otherwise,
let's talk about fun stuff out there. Gear. You guys have one of the best gear sites for RVers out there. What's on your plates these days? What's on your to be seen coolest new RV gear that you've been playing with?
Well, I don't know. So Kelly, we're doing some upgrades to Kelly's trailer. I don't know if we would consider these to be cool. We've got a new toilet to install.
Oh, that is so cool.
No, but I am very excited about my new sewerage hose.
Yeah, she's got a new sewer hose. The new Drainmaster by Lippert.
Well,
yeah.
Because it doesn't use that bayonet system. My outlet under my RV is really low, And my back is not such a happy back. So whenever I'm, and I have a 90 degree angle clear
outlet.
Yeah. Connector to the end of my sewer hose currently. So when I'm down there, sometimes I have to really bend over and sometimes I can't hardly even get it off. So this one has a system where you just stick it on. There's no, none of the bayonets and you pull a lever. It just like squeezes it and tightens it. It's the way every other single waste,
Every other
truck or whatever
fluid management system uses a cam lock.
So I am excited about that. Also, we just got a Marcel system to review that is here. This will tell you what the temperature is in your rig, the humidity. It can also detect water leaks if you have the little pods for that. But it actually already has, it already warned me, just got it yesterday, and it warned me yesterday that it was 82 in here. And I was like, what? He sent me a text. I was sitting on it, so. Yes, it works.
Oh, between sewers and sitting on products to review, that's a pretty exciting life out there.
We do lead the exciting life here, yes. Goodness. Absolutely.
Hey, at least our views are fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. I always like to say it's a small house, but we have a big yard out there. So exactly. Tell everybody how about Camp Addict and how you guys have evolved in the RV full-timer circuit out there. You have really got a great site filled with all sorts of stuff. What can they find on Camp Addict as we start a new season of RV travel for many people?
It is. 'Tis the season.
Well, thank you very much, first of all. We do take pride in the site. I think most of it is pretty much attributed to Marshall. He has this expertise and this knowledge of all things RVing, or all things, not all things electronic, but he, like from the start, he started replacing and fixing things in my rig. And I was like, how do you just know that? How do you do that? It would take me hours of searching on the internet to figure anything out. And I wouldn't want to do it anyway, because I'm just not, you know, wired like that. So, you know, there are a lot of good things out there. There's a lot of good resources to find information, but typically there's not like one page where you can find everything that you want. So it's what we decided to go ahead and try to build, is a place where you can go where it's like, boom, there's all the information on one page and you know you can trust it and it's going to be correct. It's not going to be a forum where Joe Schmo thinks he knows what's right, but he really doesn't.
And that's Marshall, maybe you should talk about that a little bit, about what we call sometimes the armchair engineers who on those forums go on to some tact of their belief or their bias, and it's totally off the wall. How do people know what to trust when they read it online?
Well, you know, first of all, we're living the life. We're actually living the life using the products. I'm in my sixth year of full-time RVing. Kelly is in her, So we've been doing this for a while. I have a technical background. I understand how things work. And I think that if you read the pages on a particular, if you look at Camp Addict and you look up, since we're on the subject, look up sewer hoses, and you read the guide on sewer hoses, you get the idea that we might actually know what we're talking about from the information that we provide. Whereas on the go to a forum and you've just got all these guys with different opinions, and that's just that. They're opinions and they're not out there using the products. They aren't living the life. So we're just trying to help use our experience and educate our viewers on RV products. It's really that simple.
All right. So what are your guys' plans for the rest of the year? Where are you headed? I know you're a big part of the Escapers group, and that's a terrific offshoot of the Escapees. And those are all the wild ones on the Escapers. I think that's where we fit. So where are your plans these days?
Well, plans are kind of always jello. But I tend to really love Colorado, and a lot of our friends are going to Colorado for the summer. So probably we will both end up being in Colorado for the summer, as long as possible. But again, jello plans, things can come up. There might be another there's a convergence in Vegas going to be potentially coming up in October. So we'll probably be there for that. It's not necessarily summer, but yeah, that's the kind of jello plan for now.
That's a great way to determine it. I always just say it's serendipity, but I like Jell-O because it does change. And yes. I ask everybody I interview, you know, what are your plans, you know, over the next couple of months? And it's interesting because those who are out there living the life, as you guys are, it's not, who knows? I mean, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be next week. And I bet you guys truly don't even now. You might have a general direction.
Well, we don't have to plan ahead with campgrounds and everything, you know, we just go and we stay out on plans. So that's another major benefit of boondocking.
That is exactly it. And again, circling full back to where we were a few minutes ago when we talked about the need to just be careful out there and realize that things can happen and have a backup plan. Enjoy the boondocking. Live like Kelly and Marshall are doing out there and like the stuff they write about made for folks who are camp addicts as well. Be yep. careful. Just use common sense because things can happen out there. It isn't all idyllic scenes of perfect campfires and starry nights. It does rain and thunder.
Yeah, I just never thought of death by camping, but, you know, it can happen.
Marshall Kelly, campaddict.com is the website. Thank you, guys. I'll put links to to it all in our show notes for this episode, and we'll see you out there on the road.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, you can see the transcript of this interview, a picture of Marshall and Kelly, all in the show notes for the episode, which is rvlifestyle.com/245. And the interview of the week is brought to you this week and every week on the RV Podcast by our friends at Sunshine State RVs in Gainesville, Florida. Now, they may be a long way from you, but you go to sunshinestatervs.com and you will find the largest selection of some of the rarest Class B RVs in the U.S. of A. In fact, I think they have more used Class B RVs than anywhere else in North America. No matter what kind of a small motor home you're looking for, Class B, maybe a B plus or even a small Class C, they have them used. They also have new RVs. Their RVs range from the early 90s to the current year, everything in between. They carry all the most popular brands like Road Trek, Pleasure Way, Winnebago, Leisure Travel, and more. You will not find a wider selection anywhere else. They also have new RVs, as I said. They are a dealer for Coachmen. They've got the Winnebago Era and just a number of other new RV brands as well. You got to go to their website, sunshinestatervs.com. One of the reasons we like Nick Schmidt and his crew there so much is that every RV they sell goes through a very thorough 172-point inspection in which they make sure that all of the mechanical and the manual systems are in top condition. Every RV is road tested. They make sure it runs and drives the way it should. They go over the interior just as much as they do the exterior. Every component is turned on. Every component is tested. And if it needs caulk on the roof, they fix the cracks up there as well before they sell it to you. You check it out. Largest selection of used Class Bs anywhere in North America and a large selection of brand new Class Bs and Class Cs as well. SunshineStateRVs.com.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
All right, this week we're heading west to the state of Nebraska with Tom and Patty Burkett.
Hi, Jennifer and Mike. Driving across Nebraska on Highway 4, it's hard to miss the big building sitting at the top of the hill. From below, it looks like a plow blade cutting through the prairie soil. And of course, that's exactly what the architect intended. The visitor center at the Homestead National Monument brings together stories and artifacts from across the continent and across more than 100 years of our national history to tell the story of those who settled the great American frontier.
In 1862, the Homestead Act made it possible for tens of thousands of Civil War veterans, freed slaves, and immigrants to claim 160 acres of their own. To obtain title to the claim, each woman or man was required to plant crops, build a home, and live on the property for 5 years. That, and about $20 in filing fees, was all it took to become a landowner. More than 270 million acres were transferred from the government to private owners as each family proved up these claims.
While the process of staking a claim was fairly easy and within reach of most people of that era, the work was anything but. There were few towns in the vast landscape that ran from the Canadian border to Mexico and from the Mississippi River to the Rocky Mountains. Do you want a cook stove? You'll need to bring it with you from St. Louis or New Orleans. Need a mule or an ox because yours broke a leg or died from winter cold? Let's hope you have a neighbor who's willing to trade one for what little bit you have to offer.
Even though the prairie soil is thick and rich and excellent for growing crops, it's covered with grass and roots up to 2 feet thick. Planting even an acre of this by hand took weeks with a cast iron tool. John Deere's invention of the steel moldboard plow made for a revolutionary change in this work, as it cut much more easily through the tough prairie sod. Remember, though, if you wanted one of these, and could afford one, you'd somehow have to get it from the factory in Moline, Illinois, to your claim in eastern Colorado or in the middle of North Dakota.
One of the most notable events of the era came when 2 million acres, much of it highly desirable, was opened for claim at high noon on April 22, 1889. This became known as the Oklahoma Land Rush and spawned the terms boomer, those who promoted the opening of the lands, and sooner, those who sneaked onto the land early to claim some of the choicest parts. The musical Oklahoma gives a romanticized version of life in the new territory, while the song Little Old Sod Shanty paints a much more accurate picture of the experience.
When you arrive at the visitor center, the first thing you see is a line of state outlines mounted on a wall. Each has a hole in it, and each hole represents the proportion of that state that was open to homesteading as part of the Homestead Act. We were surprised to see a number of populous states from east of the Mississippi on the wall, none with huge areas of homesteading, but more than we expected. Inside, the displays include typical household effects and tools, as well as many homesteading stories. They also include Native American reflections on the movement.
Among the displays is an Alice Chalmers Model C tractor. It's notable because it belonged to Ken Deerdorf, a young Vietnam War veteran who filed his homestead claim in 1974 for a piece of land on the Stony River, 200 miles west of Anchorage, Alaska. In 1988, he became the last person to earn a patent under the Homestead Act, which had been allowed to expire 2 years earlier. The tractor was recovered in 2017 by the Park Service and restored by the University of Nebraska Tractor Restoration Club.
The museum includes a pioneer cabin, an early school, and a nice collection of early farm equipment. You can walk the Quilt Discovery Trail, take an audio tour using your cell phone, and record information about your own pioneer ancestors for the on-site archives. Walk the prairie for a while, look at the flowers, listen to the birds, and maybe discover a little of your own personal history out here off the beaten path.
Traveling and celebrating the RV lifestyle. This has been the RV Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for the next episode? Just click the send voicemail link on the RVpodcast.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there, somewhere off the beaten path.
Boy, sometimes we forget how hard it was for our ancestors back in those pioneer days, don't we?
We do forget.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Burkitts, for that Off the Beaten Path report. Thanks to all of you who tuned in and listened to this episode of the RV Podcast. Remember, if you'd like to have your voice heard and be a part of the podcast, we have a special voicemail number set up for you. Just call 586-372-6990. That's 586-372-6990. You can find that number on the RVLifestyle.com blog, our travel blog. It's on the right-hand side of the blog, and you can find that number if you're driving and couldn't write it down. So thank you guys so much for listening. New episodes of this podcast are released every Wednesday. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please do so. We're available on all of the podcast platforms out there. Your favorite app, whether it's iTunes or Stitcher, TunedIn, Spotify, we're on all of them. And again, we'd just love to see you subscribe, because then you get this podcast bright and early every Wednesday morning. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you out there on the road. Bye-bye.
Happy trails.